Welcome to Hollywood Hookups and Breakups. I'm your host, Cooper Lawrence. My co-host is attorney Vicki Ziegler, the star of the hit Bravo TV show Untying the Knot. Season 2 premieres in November. Are you excited, girl?
So excited.
I can't believe your season 2 is just like a few weeks away. It's
I want everyone
town.
To see it.
Ah, it's very exciting. Well, before we get things going here, we want to take a second to thank you, the listener. Thousands of you have subscribed to our show. It just, I can't begin to tell you how much that means to us. And we're just so grateful that you're listening to us. We're grateful that you've downloaded the show. And we want you to spread the word. We're here. Share the link with your friends. Where it's free. Nothing's free in life anymore. Vicki's an attorney. She's very expensive. This is the only way you get her for free.
I think you're more expensive than me on an hourly rate. But you know what? Download it. We want to give you guys information and be fun and have a blast. So when you're driving in your car, you're just on your iPod, you're running down the West Side Highway, go for it.
Yeah. Well, we got a great guest today. Our guest is Karen Gravano, the daughter of Sammy the Bull Gravano, the star of VH1's Mob Wives. And if you don't know anything about her, you're in for a treat. Please welcome Karen Gravano.
Hi, ladies. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
How's it going?
Good. How's it going for you?
Oh, great. Just in the middle of filming. So, you know, living life, fighting, arguing, making up, arguing again.
Oh, wait. Okay, so you're already filming. Is this season 6 of Mob Wives?
Yes, can you believe it? 6 seasons. No. I'm in shock myself.
No, I can't. I was just telling Cooper right before we got on. Season 6. I remember first season, second season, third season. And all of a sudden, it's like, how did 6 years go by?
I know. I still ask myself that same question. And none of us wound up in jail. Go figure.
No, I haven't gotten a call from you to bail you out. So that's for sure.
Not yet.
I know. I almost got married, and then I was going to definitely need you for a divorce. But,
or our famed prenup, because we're going to talk about it later. We did a prenup party on the Mob Wives show. I don't know, Cooper, if you saw it, but it was fantastic.
I'll bet.
So, yes, actually, the producers loved it. It was an amazing idea. Vicki was telling me about it, and I thought, like, we should definitely do it, especially with a bunch of women who really grew up in a world where the word prenup doesn't even exist.
Right. And, you know, I feel like Vicki is such a good attorney. I almost want to get married just to get divorced, just so I can use her services. Because, first of all, being around her is amazing. And then she's so good at what she does. And I hate that I have nothing in my life that could that would warrant her services.
A cohabitation agreement, Cooper. I told you that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I agree. She is amazing.
Okay. So on the off chance, Karen, that people don't know anything about you, I'm just going to give like the quick details. Like, your dad was an underboss for the Gambino crime family, right?
Correct.
And then it all went to shit. He became an FBI informant, and he helped take down John Gotti and the Gambino family. Is that all accurate?
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay. Now, this is very interesting, because I read in your bio that you don't really want to... It's not that you don't want to be associated with him. That's your legacy. That's your family. That's your blood. You can't do anything about it. But in an effort to kind of distance yourself from that, you're on a show called Mob Wives, and your book is called Mob Daughter.
Correct.
So it's kind of hard to distance yourself from it when it's people are thinking about it when they're watching the show and reading your book.
Yes, exactly. And I agree with that. And that was definitely one of my arguments when we first started, when I was even told that the book was going to be called Mob Daughter. I was like, you know, I absolutely don't want it to be called that. I had other names, and, you know, they're like, this is just marketing to get people to understand who you are, because you are talking about a world that you grew up in, and that is, you know, you're associated with the mafia. So, yes, the title definitely draws that, you know, people that are interested in that world. But I think for me, it's about a lifestyle, and it's about family, and it's about struggle. And I think I had a bigger message, especially in my book, and that was, you know, you can't choose your family. And I want to clarify something. I never wanted to distance myself from my father. I just always, no matter what, the name Gravano, I would, you know, in Arizona say Karen Gravano, and it's automatically I'm Sammy the Bull's daughter.
Right.
So I wanted to be able to clarify a lot of things. I had my own, you know, mistakes in life, my own personality, I'm my own person. So I wanted to really be able to tell who I am and the struggles that I went through, you know, based on the world that I grew up in, but how I've learned from that. So I don't want to be able to say, you know, oh, I'm a gangster's daughter and I'm proud of that and run around and toot my horn And, you know, I also, on the same token, don't want to be like, I'm a victim of everything that my father did. Mm. I am actually just a product of my environment and used all my life lessons that pertain to the lifestyle I grew up in and tried to use it to better myself, you know.
But you know how Meryl Streep's daughters go by the last name Gummer? Have you ever chosen maybe at some point to change your last name or like to really set yourself apart and find your own identity?
You know, when my father first cooperated, especially in New York, I went from being a mafia princess, and I hate to use that word because I'd never acted that way, but if it was considered royalty in that lifestyle, that's what I was considered. And then he cooperated, and it was like I was shunned by my own immediate family. It's like, you know, so I thought for a minute, like, do I change my name? But I am who I am, and I had to go through my trials and tribulations. Like, I acted out to be accepted in that world. I wanted to be bad. I wanted to date bad boys. I wanted to do bad things because I felt like once my father cooperated, everybody turned on me. And it took a long time for me. It wasn't that I wanted to change my name. Honestly, I just wanted to be bad. I wanted people to disassociate me with the cooperation that my father did.
Right.
So maybe they would respect me because I was doing things wrong. And it's really, you know, in retrospect, looking back, it's so small-minded of me. I didn't realize, like, how I basically put myself in a closet and, like, you know, wrecked my own life because of choices. And I think for me growing up, it was more about everybody's going to judge you. People judge people on religion, on color, on their sexuality nowadays. So it's like no matter what it is, people are going to judge me because of what my father did. And I had to learn how to be a stronger person to stand out and say, hey, this is who I am. If you don't like me, don't like me for me. You know, and I think the more that people did judge me and the more that people did criticize me or try to hold me back just made me a stronger person. So I think for me, it was never really about changing my last name. It was about let me be bad so I felt accepted. And you can't run from who you are and you can't try to do things to be accepted. So I think that's a big part of my book and my story is you have to be accountable for what you do. And yes, you're going to make mistakes and yes, not everybody's perfect, and, you know, you're going to have to sometimes be accountable for the decisions and mistakes you made, but it's a lesson for you to keep going forward.
Karen, I'm so shocked at how mature you are after all of you've been through so much in your life, and I want people, our listeners, to know and try to figure out how do you make peace with who you are, because so many people have had so many difficult times going through life. You know, whether it's raised in a mafia surrounding or, you know, in an abusive family.
But she was just a kid. She didn't do anything.
She didn't do anything.
She was just a daughter. She was just sort of a victim of happenstance.
She was, but she saw so much. And she was she went from, like, the mafia princess, you know, to somebody in the garbage because of what her father did. How does she become today a woman that stands firm and says, I am who I am. Love me or leave me. Hate me or love me. But this is me. I look in the mirror and I love myself.
Like,
How did you do that?
Self-esteem come from?
Getting in trouble, making the wrong mistakes, learning from my mistakes. And, you know, that's a really great point that you brought up because when I was 19 and I was basically just, that's when a kid is really just leaving the house and learning your own identity outside of everything that I was going through. I went from being Sammy the Bull's daughter, this, you know, very respected mafia guy and, you know, feared, respected, and to being Sammy the Bull, you know, daughter, he's a rat. She can't come in the house. Mm. So I was confused. And again, I wanted people to accept me. So I did what I thought would make them like me again. And that was date bad boys, get involved in selling drugs and things that, like, everything that my father was telling me at that point that I should stay the furthest away from, that's what I wanted to do. So I wasn't always this strong. I think when I did all this and then my family got arrested and here it is your slap with reality of, look what you did now. Mm. You just had a child. You're facing jail time. Your father's going away for a long time and basically is going to take the rap for mistakes that you and your brother made. Now how do you fix this? Mm. And I think for a family, you know, at first it's like my father's like, look what you did. You know what I mean? You guys did this and now I'm in jail. I'm arrested. I'm going to take the blame for my kids. But we all had to sit down in a family and say, hey, listen, this wouldn't have happened if you weren't Sammy the Bull. Maybe... You know, and my father's like, you know, sat me down and was like, what would have made you happier if I would have stayed on the street and continued to be who I was or went to jail and put my chest out and been a stand-up guy for our world? What would that have proved to you guys? What kind of message or role model would I have been to my kids and my grandchildren. So we had to come to terms with who we are and how we love each other and how we protect each other on our own. And we didn't care. It's like we got into this little cocoon. And my father always used to say, we have to form a fist, because once we're tight like a fist, nothing else can break you. And we did, as a family, just overcome that. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. Trust me, I'm on a reality show. If I'm ever thinking I'm perfect, I'm reminded, like, when I'm watching it, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that or did that, you know? But I think it's just when you realize as a person your own mistakes, you can only be accountable for. And, you know, even this is what I tell my daughter. Like, you know, mommy been there, I did this. I can only teach you. I can't make you not do it. But if, God forbid, you screw up, I'm going to be here to help you, and I want you to learn from what you did. See, sometimes making mistakes, obviously the mistakes that we made and getting in trouble and getting arrested is horrible. It changed the outcome of my family. My father's in jail for 20 years, and I can't cry about that. I just have to live with it, and those are the mistakes that we made. So I could try to teach people to do better, you know what I mean? But I think a lot of times people become so self-absorbed with self-esteem and caring about what other people think about them that they do things out of their own character. So for me now as a grown woman, I realize that I did that, you know, and that's just something that I've learned from. I don't know how that happened. Honestly, I think having a child and just, you know, wanting to raise her and be a better person for her made me not care about what anyone else thinks, because I come home to my child and I know whatever I do is to better my life. It made me become more confident in who I am.
Did having a child make you understand your father and his actions a little bit more in terms of like how he parented?
Absolutely. You know, and it is crazy because even when I did my book, which is, it came out like 3 years ago, and I did some of the hardest interviews, you know, and people were like, your father's this and your father's that, and how can you love your father? And I'm like, you know, the rest of the world sees him as Sammy the Bull. I see him as a friend, a provider, a father, someone that wants to shelter and protect me. So my loyalty in me can never look at him as a bad person, although I do not condone the decisions that he made. We as a family live with that. And it's not saying I'm a victim. You know, my father made decisions in his life that he thought was going to better our family. Growing up in that world, you know, the men went out and they did their crime. They left the house. We didn't see it. I think a big thing, especially with Italian-American mafia, is they surround themselves with family. Mm. They protect themselves. That's right. You know, even the word is Cosa Nostra. It's like, you know, this thing of ours. There are five different families. That's very strong in that culture. So it's holidays, Christmas, family, you're together. And my father was a man that made sure he had dinner with us every night, no matter if he had to go to the city and meet John Gotti or whatever it was. It was 5:30. How's your day? How's everything going? Is there anything you want to talk about? So I took a lot of his parenting and you know, the things that he taught me and instilled in me, and tried to do that in my daughter. Mm-hmm. I don't teach my daughter, if you screw up, that's the worst thing. You'll be punished for the rest of your life. You know, I try to teach her, but I also tell her every day, like, I'm your protector. Right. If God forbid you feel that you do something that's so horrible, come to me. I'm going to help you fix it. You know what I mean? Like, and again, you know, I have a teenage daughter, so it could be something as, you know, they go out to parties, and I was a teenager once. Right. I wasn't even a good teenager. I was a very bad one. So I tell her all the time, like, I know there's going to be drinking, and I don't condone that. But God forbid, please, if you do drink or if someone around you drinks, do not get in a car. Like, have contact with me. I'm going to be there. If you feel like your friend or something's going wrong, especially in the world we live in today now, kids are trying drugs or something, always know that you can call me, because I'm going to try to do my best to help you out of any situation.
And that's what your father gave you, the fact that you knew that dinner, 5:30, he was always there for you. Despite what the rest of his day was like, he was still your daddy, and he was still... Do you call him daddy? What do you refer to him as?
Dad.
Dad.
I call him dad.
And what's your relationship with him now?
Oh, actually, I just left him yesterday. I go to visit him. He's still in jail. He's definitely somebody that, you know, I consider not just a father, but a friend and an advisor. You know, if I have decisions that I want to make, I bounce them off of him. Sometimes he doesn't always give me the answer that I want, and then I do it anyway, and he'll say, I told you so.
Right.
It's a regular, you know, pretty much, I want to say, regular, loving father-daughter relationship.
Karen, is there anything that you don't tell your daughter about your father?
You know, it's hard for me to, no, there isn't nothing that, I mean, I tell her everything that I've seen growing up. I tell her the things that I can speak on. And I don't only have a daughter. I have a nephew who I raised pretty much as my son as well. Mm-hmm. And when the first time I remember, they hadn't seen my father in years. And I took them up to, this really stands out in my mind because Nicholas was 10 at the time, and that was kind of like the time in my life when I started realizing what was going on and like, okay, maybe my father isn't the regular construction man, you know what I mean? There's definitely extra outside activities, and I started questioning things, even murder, because a man that was going to purchase my father's nightclub was actually murdered outside, and I had known my father was having an issue with him, and, you know, you could just tell a little bit by activity, but then, you know, my father, in his mind, these men are trained. He didn't come home and act nervous and flee, but you could tell there was something going on. So with that being said, you know, I questioned it in my mind. Can my father be possible? Could he have murdered someone? And then the next day it's like he's cooking and he's in the kitchen talking to me, joking. And I'm like, nah, that couldn't have happened. You just put it away in the back of your mind until, you know, I was basically 16 and started realizing, yes, this is definitely part of his job description, I guess you can say at that point. But my nephew, when I had taken him, he didn't see my father in years to go, and he's very intuitive and he loves his grandfather, you know, and I know that he was going on the internet and he was Googling things and people were asking, like, I think one of his kids at school's mom said, your last name's Gravano, any relation to that big gangster Sammy the Bull? And, you know, Nicholas is like, well, my grandfather's Sammy, but I don't know if he's a gangster, you know, like, so I decided that we were going to be open and tell them. Although I didn't feel it was my place to tell him anything like that. So we were driving to see him, and my nephew's like, did Grandpa ever murder anyone? And I was like, you know, I think that you should ask him that question, because that's not my place to right. tell the kids that. You know, if they ask me what they read on the internet and stuff, I can basically tell them. But I always refer those kind of things to my father. And, you know, the second we got in, I could tell my nephew was all nervous. And he's looking at my father, and I said, Dad, Nicholas wants to ask you something. And I was nervous to even say it. And my father's like, what? I said, he wants to know if you ever murdered someone. Mm. And my father was like, here, Nick, let me explain. Just sat there that whole afternoon, you know, prison. I don't know if you guys were ever on prison business, and hopefully you never have to be or ever were. But they're not the funnest thing. And you sit there for hours and hours and hours. But that was probably one of the... It was so long that day, but it felt like the quickest because my father explained everything because my daughter was there, my nephew. From soup to nuts, like, he explained to us what the mafia was, what it meant, what it stood for, how it started, why he got involved, what his beliefs were. You know, even when it comes to murder, why that happens. And, you know, it was just kind of like, I don't know, it was like watching a movie, but in our own world, it was... For me, that prison visit is really what triggered me to say, I want to write a book. Like, I want to tell a story because I think people look at these men and think they're killers, they're murderers, they're this, they're that. And I can't say they're not, but they believe in something so much that they, you know, it's like they're almost brainwashed into it. And then it's like everybody around you is involved in that lifestyle, so it becomes normal, you know what I mean? And that's when I decided to write my book because, yes, that world is not a good world, and I went through a lot of trials and tribulations because of it, and it caused me to make my own mistakes. And not only did my father was involved in murder, but I had lost an uncle to that world that was murdered, so I've been on both sides of it. So for me to sit here and say, oh my God, I'm a victim, poor me, it was like, no, I want to write this book and I want to tell people what it is and what I took away from it, because even though people grew up in that lifestyle, you could still be strong enough to do something different. And for me, that's, you know, granted, I'm on a reality show, and, you know, we always say the reason why the name Mob Wives came was for marketing. You know, we all thought it was going to be something totally different. When it came out, I was flipping. I can tell you each of our, like, reactions. Trita was mad because she really had no connection. Carla has some mob history that she didn't want to ever talk about. You know, Renee cared about what her father was going to think, and I only just seen, like, the headlines and everything that I lived in the 90s.
It's good that they did it because 80s. It made the show very successful because it's a very salacious title. But I want to go back to something you just said that I found really fascinating. When you said your father kind of put it in context and was talking about how that's how we all thought and that was something, a belief we really share, and you have to understand what it was like for us. The way you described it kind of sounds like the way people who are fundamentalists in any religion describe something, where they describe, like, I mean, it feels almost religious the way you're saying it, but almost to the extreme where you kind of...
Cult-like,
yeah,
is that what you mean?
Almost cult-like.
Yeah.
Or religious, like a religion,
yeah,
but one
exactly.
of these religions where people are just, they live and die, literally die for it.
Well, you said it perfectly, because that's what the mafia is. You give up religion, you denounce the public, you become, that's your organization, your family. These men even go in, and when they take their oath, they give up their family. That comes second to Cosa Nostra. That's your family now. Mm. So
I just got goosebumps, by the way. I literally just got goosebumps. It is so rare that happens to me.
It's cold in here.
No, it's this to me is so fascinating. I don't know why. I feel like, well, I think so many people are so interested in the mafia and in it being inculcated to an organization, to a group, to be so focused on a message where you can give up your family, someone
right.
you love, your children.
Yeah, Islamics. I mean, you're describing exactly mm-hmm. some of these fundamentalists that have that same vision or that same cult-like behavior, that same thought,
mm-hmm.
where really the group is more important than the individual.
Mm-hmm. And the idea, it's and this idealist,
yes.
It's propaganda. You can believe it. We don't judge anybody. But people go into it with an agenda. And it's fascinating for me when Karen's recounting what her father was talking about to her nephew and her daughter, because that's honesty. And I think, I don't know if the oath comes with, you know, making sure that people don't know the truth.
Right.
But to me, I find that he was so honest, and we don't know the details, of course, specifically of what he said he did and what went on. But to be courageous in a way, which you would never think somebody would maybe use in this sentence.
But the context is what's important, because to answer the question, did you ever murder anybody, just to go yes, it doesn't mean anything. If you explain mm-hmm. in what context you did murder somebody, it makes a very
and why
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it makes a very big difference, especially if it's a family member who's going to be having to answer that question, right, Karen?
Exactly. And you know, my father always put it into perspective, and I think when you break down the mafia, you know, they call themselves soldiers. They're soldiers of Cosa Nostra. My father was a soldier for the American government that went off to Vietnam, you know what I mean? So in his mind, he was supposed to kill for this government.
Mm.
And when you become a member of Cosa Nostra, you give up this government. That becomes your government. So I was a member of Cosa Nostra. Now I will kill for Cosa Nostra. So like you are saying, it is a cult. It's a form of brainwashing and beliefs and things that are instilled in you from these groups. And I think a lot of it, you know, when my father later in life, the morals that he thought he was living by started to see it all fall apart. You know, you never betray a brother or your brotherhood. And, you know, I think, and this is, I always get criticized for saying this, and I will say it till I'm blue in the face. My father didn't just wake up one day and say, hey, I want to tell, you know, and he's still, that's something that he lives with every day and says, you know, I struggle because to me and in my heart, I betray my own oath. So I have to live with this. But he felt betrayed by John Gotti when he heard tapes and he heard things that happened in jail. And then John telling him he can't defend himself. He doesn't have the right to a lawyer. Hmm. That John Gotti is more important to the public than Sammy the Bull. And my father's like, what public? What Cosa Nostra? We don't recognize the public. So to me, it became real political between the both of them. And I think a lot of people don't understand that side of it, where people are like, oh, Sammy told to get himself out of trouble. No, my father told because he felt betrayed by John Gotti.
Yeah.
And my father, you know what I mean? So, and I get, every time I say that, people say, oh my God, you're
right.
saying that you're Sammy the Bull's daughter. He's the man that got on the stand. Absolutely, he did. He didn't, and in his mind, he wasn't going to do it from a closet or try to set him up or tell John, you know, he can't defend himself. He's because of the public. Like we as gangsters don't ever recognize the public. That's what we do. When we commit a murder, we ain't out doing it so the public looks at us a certain kind of way. And even in that world, murder isn't supposed to be committed for financial gain. It's supposed to be out of, if you disrespect a family or a soldier, you know what I mean? However they structure that. So there's a lot, you know, and maybe one day when he gets out, he can explain it in more detail. But I do stand by what I believe in, because for so many years, I felt so betrayed by my father. I couldn't understand. I was always taught, like, you don't tell. So I never really understood until I honestly sat down and had things that not only did he tell me, but surfaced from other people, other things, other situations that I went through personally to have to realize what that world was.
What is it about your father's personality that you think he was a little more vulnerable to that? Because once we put it in the context of like somebody who's in a cult or somebody who's like a fundamentalist in a religion, those seem to be the most vulnerable people psyche-wise. So, because you don't seem that way at all. Like, if I wanted to indoctrinate you in some cult, like, you're not going. There's no question. Maybe I can get you to come shoe shopping, but that's really, I feel like that's the level, that's where you draw the line.
You know, I think a lot of times it's, it's when my father growing up, my grandfather coming from Italy and all this stuff, and how he respected that world and those men, but wasn't a part of it. But my father, as a little kid, seeing the respect they get, the cars, the jewelry, it was very flashy. He was drawn to that. And I think anybody, including myself, could be drawn to certain things. And that's not necessarily joining a cult. It could be, even in today's society, the way kids are and the way they feel like they have to be a certain way, or maybe a girl feels that she has to look a certain way because this is the expectations that are put on you. Mm. Well, growing up in Bensonhurst in Brooklyn and seeing these men who are very respected by not only just other men, by women, by children, and that's something that, for me growing up, when people would say, the mafia, your father was a bad person, I couldn't see it because I'd walk down and here, you know, church was letting out, and we're in the bakery, and there's these old women. Oh, Sammy, how are you? How's your mother? It's like people know each other from Italy and families, and it's, you know, how can these people respect him so much if he's such a horrible person for the way society should look at him? You understand? So you do become brainwashed, because I never looked at it that way. And I was brainwashed at one point, because when all these people that I grew up in decided to turn on me, I wanted to be bad so they can accept me again, to be part of that again. And I think that for me, that's what my message is. It's like, you know, everybody goes through it, no matter what it is. Everybody's going to fall victim to some sort of wanting to be like somebody else or wanting to be accepted into some group one way or another in life. But it's how do you not let that control you and destroy your life?
Right, because you made a point that at 19, I mean, this all went down when you were 19. That's a very vulnerable place for a girl to be, especially sexually. And, you know, we all acted out sexually at 19, but we just did it for different reasons.
Well, Cooper, maybe you did.
Well, Vicky's very virginal. I was a big whore back then, I know. So,
well, you know, I think even ties into a lot of the things that Vicky does, because I think, well, even my cousin, like, we always joke, and I was always like, they'll consider me like the black sheep of the family because I'm 43. I have a daughter with it outside my race. You know, nobody does that. And I'm not married. And, you know, I date my boyfriend for a while. But, like, traditionally, people are supposed to get married. And that's how you're raised. And I think, you know, so many women, I hear women just going, oh, I need to find a husband. And it's like at that age where they think they just want to get married so they can get married and have a kid and do what women are supposed to do. It's not, you know, and just in this generation now, women are becoming a lot more independent and want to have careers and stuff. But I think, you know, we as human beings, that's what we do. We do things because we think that's expected of us. You know, women back in the day thought they should be married and having kids and cleaning the house. And hence, that's, you know, then they're divorced.
I wish we still had those days. Somebody please take care of me.
Yes, traditional roles have changed so much.
It's like working. Somebody pay my bills.
I know. For some reason, I keep adding jobs. I'm not detracting them. I don't know why.
I pop. Know, right?
You know, right? You squeeze out a baby, and it's like you're back in work in 2 weeks. You know, Karen, trust is such an important part of your upbringing. Do you find it difficult to trust people that you encounter? And A, if you do, which I think your answer is yes, how has the TV show changed that for you or not?
You know, I definitely think trust is so hard, especially for what I went through, even being betrayed by my own family. You know, once my father cooperated, his own sister turned on him. And I think she did because she didn't know what else to do, or she thought maybe something was going to happen to her or one of her children. So for me, I had to sit back because I didn't talk to even my aunt for many, many, many years. We just started reconnecting again and started to realize that me as a person, there are certain people that I do trust, and I would be devastated if they, you know, betray me, but you have to be careful of who you let in, but you also have to, as a person, let your guard down and just hope that that person doesn't betray you. But being on TV, it's definitely, even in my relationship, like my boyfriend will tell me now, like, you're like a dude, you're so hard. And I'm like, I don't mean to be that way, because right. Trust me, I'm very much like a woman and I want to be treated like one. But I think I do sometimes, maybe because of the things that I've seen in my life. I mean, I'm not going to say that it didn't affect me in a certain kind of way where I'm very more guarded and protected. So that's something that I work on, you know, even in a relationship. I think sometimes I'm not the most trustworthy person, and I'll be like, yeah, right, you know, when I have to not always have such a hardness on me.
Cooper is a doctor, by the way. I'm not sure if you know that, Karen.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
But a PhD.
Yeah, she's
not,
got a
not
PhD.
Like a medical doctor.
No, no, I was about
to say. If
you
have foot fungus, I can't help you.
I was about to explain what you do as a psych, and I think it's so fascinating to me when you put up a wall because you've been hurt in your life. It comes off as tough, your tough exterior, and
right.
You're rough.
No. I'm telling you, Karen and I are both from Brooklyn. I'm from Coney Island. And there's an expression, you could take the girl out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out
right.
of the girl. I find that every day of my life, I have to remind myself that I'm in proper society and I'm not still on the streets of Coney Island. And as
you're
much
a gangster,
as,
huh?
No,
Cooper.
Really. A gangster, look who we're talking to over here. Hardly. But I did have that Brooklyn tough personality,
yeah.
And I still
mm-hmm.
do, and I have to remind myself that I'm in proper society, and I'm not going to lean on that. And I think that's a Brooklyn thing almost as much as it's a gangsta thing.
Really? All right. What I think, I mean, I personally do it. I, you know, try to come from a tough place when I'm pretty soft inside, and I think it's a defense mechanism, at least for me. And I also think you become more masculine than feminine because you do it. And I always,
right?
I try to remind myself, wait a second, you know what? I don't have to be the boss. I don't have to be aggressive. You know, come down a notch and be kind and soft. And I think maybe that's what Karen's boyfriend's seeing.
Yeah.
Cooper is right, because when I was in Arizona and when Mob Wives first started and my producers came out, and they always joke about this, they were like, we thought you smoked pot before we came and met you. She was so laid back and like, yeah, cool. And I think when you're just in a different environment, you're taken out of, and I don't know if it was just so relaxing and peaceful for me out there because I didn't grow up and I didn't have my roots in this history or whatever it may have been. But when I am taken out of it, I'm very, like, on a different level. So they always joke to me. They would say, we would tell you to smoke a joint, but we can just tell you to go get a week in Arizona and you'll come back and be a different person for a while. It's just like you do get out of your environment. And, like, I think, you know, being here, it just, I'm back in New York. I'm back around people that I grew up in. It's just this wall all of a sudden went up.
Environmental, definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely environmental. Mm-hmm. But you know, but the thing is, but you always have to manage other people's expectations about who you're going to be based on your family history and your father and everything else. That must be exhausting.
Yes. You know, I think that, and it's crazy because when people actually meet me, and I think coming off of the television, you know, listen, I'm not going to sit here and ever say that I was handed a script. I wish I could be like, they made me do it.
Yeah.
They made me do that. But no, that it's just these situations that you get into. And then it's like, if we're doing a scene and we're filming for 2 hours, you're probably seeing 4 minutes of what actually happened. So they'll take the most juiciest part out of that to create a show.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times people think I'm so hard and so aggressive or, you know, and I'm so not like that at all. So it's like, yeah, when people meet me, they're like, wow. And this always stood out in the back of my mind because it was actually like an insult and a compliment at the same time. But when I did my book, I did The View, and Barbara Walters were there, and we were actually talking. And she was just staring at me, and she's like, wow. And I'm like, what? I bet she's going to say, like, your eyelashes is falling off or something. She goes, you're actually articulate. I would have never thought that. And I'm like,
thank you.
Because
fuck,
I know
you,
when you watch
Barbara.
The show, it comes off, but, you know, and I get that a lot.
Unbelievable.
You know, I think when you're on a show and then people always think like, oh, she's so gangster. And she, even like a lot of times in men, and maybe this is my issue dating too, is like, I don't know, like, even when I tried to date people that were normal or whatever, like, I met this guy, we were in Arizona, he had a great career and all this other stuff, and we go out, and he's starting to tell me how he beat people up, and I'm like, why are you telling me this?
Yeah,
it's weird,
hot.
And
mm-hmm.
it's definitely not attractive at all. Like, he's like, I don't know, I just, you know, aren't you used to that? I'm like, no, I don't want that. Like, you know, I just feel like sometimes people think, and when you meet my father, I mean, listen, I'll never take away the fact that he is gangster and probably is as dangerous if they come if you betray him or try to hurt someone.
Right.
But he is the most laid back, funnest, like, just, he always jokes. Like, even people when they meet him are like, wow, you know, that's how I grew up. Like, I don't think people see that side because maybe they think I grew up with this, like, I didn't know what he did when he left the house. I didn't see that side of him. I seen the Sammy that would come home and joke and make me rub his head for money. He'd be like, give me a massage and I'll give you money. It wasn't like, you know, I just have these bags of money that I can go in the closet and take. I mean, there were bags, I ain't gonna lie. I wasn't allowed to go in there and take the money, but I'm just saying I was always taught respect, responsibility, you know, how to be polite. And this is something that I will thank my father for, because when I was graduated high school, I didn't thank him for it. He gave me a florist for my graduation present. I'll never forget. I knew it was coming in the business, and I thought it was my mother's, and I really pay attention. I graduate high school, we're out to dinner, and he gives me this box, and I open it up to this little box. I think it was going to be a diamond ring or something, and it's a key. I'm like, what is this? It's a key to the rest of your life. He goes, you're going to work the florist. That's yours. That's your name. That's going to be your thing. And I'm like, thanks.
like a store where you sell flowers, an actual florist?
Yes. Yes. That was my, and
wow.
I had to work every day and open it and close it. And it was right next to his construction office, which, you know, he was able to watch me. And it was probably the best time of my life. You know, I was around him, and it was, you know, right before he got arrested. I opened the place, and, you know, I was the house florist for probably every gangster in New York City and funeral parlor and catering hall.
It's actually very beautiful that he gave his daughter flowers. I mean, in a way, he sees you as this flower, as this, you know, it's a real metaphor for how he saw you, and it's also the lesson of responsibility at the same time. I mean, that's a really beautiful story.
Yes. And you know, so I think that people didn't, I wasn't always just, you know, able to, like, get what I wanted. Everyone always says mafia princess. And yes, when you look at that lifestyle, I was definitely royalty, you know. I mean, and we were treated that way. If we were invited, and I always bring back the story because, you know, people are always like the Gaudis and you. And, you know, I always feel like no matter what it is, and Victoria, she had bashed mob wives for years, and she was calling us train wrecks, and season 5, she pops up on the show.
Yeah.
Like, hey,
I saw her.
Come on, the train is taking off.
So funny.
Come on. You know, and I really wish that we would have the opportunity to actually sit down in a room. And I did send messages to her outside of the show, which I just felt for us, we are so much bigger than mob wives and getting on TV. And I don't even want to fight with her.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure she may feel some sort of way about me because of my father, but we, and maybe they don't like the things that I say. But I read her book, you know, and she has her story, and I always felt, and they're doing a movie now and all this. And listen, they have a story. They grew up in this world. And I think for the Gaudis and the Gravanos, we've seen a lot of, let's say, good things, or, you know, we lived the high life, but we've also seen a lot of heartache.
Right.
And I know that my father is not in my life the way I want him to be. And I'm sure Victoria was very close with her father, and he wasn't. And not to judge who's right or who's wrong. We were both daughters that loved our father. So if we were ever able to come together and sit across from each other and listen, I mean, we could hash out the facts and be able to move past that. But I think as women, we're always going to be connected forever. You know, it'll go down in history, Gaudi and Gravano.
But change the legacy. If you two can sit down and change the legacy now, that would really be a big thing.
I just felt that would have been, you know, she wasn't as open-minded, I guess, as me.
Right.
Maybe there's things that they feel that they still want to keep hidden or whatever it is, and that's fine, because I would never sit at a table and be disrespected either. But in the same token, I think whatever we can work past, and, you know, I would have loved to have sat down with her and Mob Wives. It just didn't happen, and probably for the better, because, you know, we're on a reality show. They would have made this whole hype, and maybe it would have escalated into becoming something stupid or an argument, when I do feel that she, if anyone, and I don't want to say league, but I will use that word, because in that world, we were in that league, you know?
Right.
And I remember when we were kids, like, going to parties, and it's like, oh, you guys are sitting here. I remember being, I don't even know whose bridal shower it was, or somebody in that world, you know? And here is Gaudi and Gravano's family, and we're at the best table. We're getting our food first. And I was like, why are they serving us first? Because everyone else was kind of like, sit down. And I'm like, please, we're not even the family. Like, you know, it was just, I didn't even realize at that point we were treated differently. And, you know, I think now in retrospect, going back, like, we can all come together and say, was it really worth it?
I think generationally it's time to, you probably have so much more in common than you both even realize.
Right.
And that would be an interesting interview. I'd like to see that. So listen, we're running out of time. This has been amazing. Karen, tell us what everybody can look forward to with the Mob Wives season 6 coming and when everyone can tune in.
Okay. I'm very happy to say that the next season of Mob Wives, which will be airing this December, I don't know the exact date, but we're bringing it back to New York where it originated. We got rid of the Philly girls, and I have nothing against Philly. I just had something against one of the girls. So I think you're going to see the original cast back together. There's going to be some old drama, some new drama. Definitely drama fuels the show. And I think you'll see, relationships and women that no matter what the situation, we have a common bond and we protect and understand each other. So, all the things that made Mob Wives in season 1, I feel like, is really here in season 6. Awesome. I'm excited for this season. And there'll be 2 new girls.
I hope we hate them, because I love to hate people on television. So that's awesome. Thank you, Karen Gavano. You are
awesome.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing all that with us.
I had so much fun talking to you guys.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much. Honestly, there was so much good stuff, takeaways. You are really a strong woman. You're a great mother, and I'm glad to call you a friend. And we will be tuning in to VH1 Mob Wives Season 6 in December, and everyone that's going to be downloading this podcast should also.
And we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for listening to Hollywood Hookups and Breakups with Cooper and Vicky. You can email us your thoughts and your questions at HollywoodHookupsBreakups@gmail.com. Special thanks to our producers, Anthony and Dennis, who put Hollywood Hookups and Breakups together every week. Thank you to Blog Talk Radio for making this all possible. Follow me on Twitter at Cooper Lawrence. Follow Vicky at Vicky Ziegler. Find us on Instagram and Facebook. Vicky and I are back next week with another exciting episode. Thank you so much for downloading.